Life can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
Welcome to More Than Ordinary, brought to you by Seven Generation Games, with your amazing host, myself, Anne Maria DeMars.
And the other amazing host, myself, Maria Burns Ortiz.
So last week, Maria thought we were not positive enough. So today's podcast is all about positivity.
Not like crazy, feely, touchy, feely, ooh, it's so wonderful and exciting positivity, but, you know, as positive as we get over here with our little sarcastic selves.
So let's jump right into what I learned from Dan Scheinman. You should look up Dan Scheinman. He's a really interesting guy. He is an investor, and his focus is on companies founded by people over 40. He did not invest in us, but we still think it's a cool idea.
I mean, I'm not over 40, so.
Okay, I guess that's why he didn't invest in us. But he said that one of his objectives is to show that you can make just as much money, if not more, countering the stereotype of all good ideas are created by people under 30.
And I'm over 30, so I do take issue with that.
So I think we have our own personal objectives in running this company, and part of it is to make huge piles of money so we can have our own private helicopters, which we can use to fly to our islands where we will swim in mountains of cash.
Scrooge McDuck money vaults. I've always wanted to dive into one of those. Now, the physics behind it might not really be comfortable, but you know what? Let's see.
However, in addition to the Scrooge McDuck money vault, we have other objectives. And seriously, one of mine is to show that you can do well at the same time that you're doing good. And I've mentioned this before in this podcast. One of the things that bothers me is when I look back when I was young, I can remember staying home from school to watch the moon landings. And that was just an amazing thing. The smartest people in our generation were working on getting a man to the moon and space travel. And that was just so amazing. And now the smartest people of our generation are working on, you know, getting Google ads to pay off more so that you click on this link to get a credit card. And I think that's just sad.
Well, and one of the things that gets to me too is a lot of times people say, well, are you guys a nonprofit? And I say no, because we are a company. And I don't think that being a company and making money and doing something as a social benefit, like fixing education, improving people's math scores, I don't think that you can't do one and do the other at the same time. I think you can do both. You can do something really good and still make money off of it. And I don't know when or where this shifted that you can't, or, oh, well, if you're doing something good, then you shouldn't make money. You should be a nonprofit. You should give it all away. Never mind, how are we going to pay for ourselves and our developers? And we're putting a lot of time and effort into this, but I think you can do both.
I think it's easier to scale and grow in a for-profit company. And I completely agree with you that you need money to do that. My goal is to get Seven Generation Games in as many schools as have textbooks. There are a lot of major problems in the world. There are people who are going hungry. In the U.S., we hear it every time. You can't look at a website, open up a newspaper without hearing, oh, U.S. students are doing terrible. We're doing terrible in STEM. We have inequality. All of these things. To me, that seems a more important problem to address than how can I get fresh flowers to somebody in San Francisco within the hour? How can I order chocolate chip cookies online and get them delivered while they're still warm? And that will send an email to somebody who delivers milk. That's not a major problem. And yet those are the kinds of apps that we're seeing, just ridiculous things. I think you gave an example, I don't know if it was on the blog or I think it was on the blog on, you know, luxury villa rentals. Is that really the biggest problem facing society? So I really have an objective here to show that you can focus on the big problems, the things that change people's lives, and still make money at that and have a return for your investors. And maybe it won't be within 10 months, as we talked about on our last podcast, but I've put 3 years of my life and a good bit of money in this to see that we can do it, and we will. So that's where my motivation comes from.
Maybe your kids are already back in school. They're easing their way back into homework again and it hits you. Or maybe you're gearing up for the start of a new school year when suddenly you're struck with the realization. The entire summer passed and your kids didn't do any math. Between camp and the beach and pool, fractions, multiplication, and division just didn't seem to factor in. Wait, factors? That's a math thing too, right? Don't worry. We've got the perfect way to ease back into math and review what your kids seem to have forgotten over the summer. Seven Generation Games. Games that teach math and social studies in a fun gaming environment. Just go to 7generationgames.com/buy to get them today.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, presented by 7 Generation Games. As always, I am Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm still Anne Maria DeMars.
You know, and we were talking about before about how you can kind of do it both. And you can have both. You can have a company that does good, and you can also have a company that makes money. And I think sometimes people get caught up in this idea that there's only one possibility. And I think that also goes for products. You know, in the startup world, there's so much talk about competitors. Who are your competitors? And I understand that, because if somebody else is doing what you're doing, that people want to know, well, how are you different, and how are you going to get, you know, traction, or how are you going to build your company? How are you not just a ripoff of them? Never mind Uber and Lyft, as far as I can tell, are basically the same company, so that there is room for that. But I think one of the things is in most sectors, it's not a zero-sum game. You know, we look at what we're doing, and yes, we are a math game, and we're going to be an app, but look at your phone. Do you have one app on your phone? Look at your bookshelf. Do you have one book on your bookshelf? If so, I never trust anybody that doesn't have any books. Maybe if you've got a whole bunch on your Kindle, I'll give you that. But again, if you only have one of anything, I would be shocked. And so when you hear about this idea, it's I feel like it really pits startups against each other. And some of the best advice I've gotten has been when other supposedly quote-unquote competitors realize that we're not against each other, but we're actually, in a lot of cases, have the same vision and mission and drive.
That's true. Can I interject in a completely irrelevant story?
Of course, of course.
Okay, so you were talking about people not having any books. So after Ron passed away, you know, before I met Dennis, my friends are trying to introduce me to guys. And this is a really kind of interesting thing. Any of you who are single, have been single listening to this, when your friends try and fix you up, this tells you not only what your friends think of you, like what who might be of interest to you. Well, I was living in North Dakota, and there's not a lot of single men out there, I guess. So one of my friends introduces me to this guy, and we go out.
Or North Dakota, there's not really a lot of people there in general.
Right, right. So we go out, and I know it's going to be a problem because he starts saying to me, "So, you're a doctor, huh?" And I said, "Well, yeah." He says, "Yeah, your friend told me you're a doctor." And I said, "Well, I'm not a physician. You know, I have a PhD." She says, "You write books." And I said, "Well, I haven't written any books myself yet. I've written chapters in some books and a lot of scientific articles." And so you're a doctor, huh? As I finally tried to think of something to say, I said, "Well, what kind of books do you like to read?" And he says, "Well, I don't actually read books."
Ooh. Was that the part where, and you didn't even have a cell phone to fake a call at that time.
And he says, "But I'd like to look at maps." So kind of went downhill from there. I married Dennis. It worked out in the end. So that was my irrelevant story. Would you like to go back to your point?
Yes. So now that we know nothing against generally folks who, what is it? Topography is not the study of maps. That's the study of like geography. What's the study of maps? I know it's not mapology.
Somebody were writing.
Cartology.
Cartography.
Okay. Fine. Well, close enough. Anyways, yes, so we don't have an issue with cartographers. We just have an issue with people that don't read books.
Farmers.com's probably been a big app for you people in North Dakota. There's some doing good. If you ever use Farmers.com, tell us in the comments. We're interested to know how to work out for you.
Getting away from Farmers.com and getting back to people that are doing multiple apps.
Farmers need love, too.
It is. I suppose that's true. See, this is a problem that somebody saw and addressed. But we were also talking before we started talking about farmers and maps and
competitors,
love lives, about competitors. And this idea that sometimes you don't have to be cutthroat with everyone because you have a lot of things in common and you can learn a lot from other people. And so that's one of the things that I think we've done really well and hopefully is, you know, we're not one of those people, "I can't tell you about my thing because we're in stealth mode and I can't, you know, share to you, if, you know, yes, we got some SBIR funding and here's the agencies we went through and here's a little bit of our experience and it's a lot of hard work, but you know, it's top secret how we did the SBIR stuff because we don't want you to go up against us. And it's not always a big fight. And I think once you realize that, it's better for everyone.
I've even given copies of our funded SBIR award to people who are interested in writing one. I mean, they're not going to give another grant for that exact project because we already got it. Sure, you know, I'm willing to help people out. And I agree with you. When I started out as a young professor, I remember other older people saying, well, don't share your research with other people, or why would you tell somebody those references? Why make their research easier? And I just thought that was completely ridiculous. And I always have appreciated the people who are the opposite, that helped me, that said, here's a copy of my grant that got funded. If you're not sure how to write one, here's a copy of this article that I wrote, and here's how I did the analysis. So you can be that person that's holding everything tightly to your chest, or you can be the person sharing with somebody else.
Well, and I think some of it also comes down to, like we were talking about earlier, you know, wanting to do good on top of, you know, the financial aspects of running a company. And I think if you find other people who have that same drive and that same commitment and who are looking to also, you know, revolutionize what's being done in education and improve kids' math scores, I think there's a lot more in common than there is in competition.
Right. And, you know, it's funny when I think about, you were talking about how people have more than one book. You always read about the writer salons and the different famous writers who got together, and maybe they read each other's work, maybe they just talked about writing, but I think, like you said, people have more than one game, and we can get ideas from other people doing games. I've also had some very valuable conversations with people who were selling to the education market. So maybe they're doing online professional development courses, say. So they're not the same as us, but they can talk about meeting with school districts and the whole really boring, to me, process of getting through the 987 levels where it has to be blessed off by, you know, 11 of the 12 apostles and signed in the blood of a unicorn at the light of a harvest moon.
Right, and it's one contact for Tuesdays and one contact for odd days of the month and one contact for months at end and Y. It's enough to drive you insane. And that's, I really appreciate when people who have been there before us and had success are willing to share what made them successful.
So that's our partial tip, is don't be a jerk. Share with people, talk to other people. But we have our real tip coming.
5 times 5 equals 25. 1/5 of 100 is 20. You calculate the perimeter by adding the length of all sides. 4/8, 2/4, 1/2, they're all the same things. You know how I know all these things? Because I play 7 Generation Games. 7 Generation Games teaches math skills I need to learn through cool games I want to play. And they build on each other, so just by playing awesome games, I've mastered multiplication, fractions, averages, you name it. I might be small now, but before you know it, I'll be doing advanced calculus and linear regression. And I'll be ready to do it because building a strong math foundation is essential to future math success. 7 Generation Games, games that make you smarter. Buy them at 7generationgames.com/buy.
Shout out to Lisa from Pennsylvania for all her awesomeness, which she showed by donating all 3 games to a classroom. If you too want to be awesome and donate games to a classroom, go to 7generationgames.com/buy for more details.
Welcome to today's final segment on More Than Ordinary, presented by 7 Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm still Anne Maria DeMars.
And so we were talking about what we wanted our kind of tip advice part to be, and you had a really good story that segues into the tip. So why don't you just start with that?
I was passing by a place the other day where they used to have a business incubator for a startup. And a few years ago, when I was just starting out with 7 Generation Games, when it was just an idea, I talked to the person running it, and they said, you know, we don't really think that there's that much of a market for middle school kids. We would be interested if you want to do something aimed at preschool kids, because we think a lot of money comes in from yuppie parents buying things to get little Buffy, or whatever the popular yuppie name is now, ahead, so she can do well when she gets into kindergarten. And we don't think that there's a lot to be made doing things for kids who are on Indian reservations or in the inner city. So if you would change your focus, we would be interested in funding you. And I said, you know, I don't believe in that. I think that it's important to develop things for kids who need them more than for kids who don't. And I mean, not that I don't care about little yuppie kids, because, you know, we live in Santa Monica and I love my kids and I want them to have the best, but I also think that there's a real need for kids in these low-resource schools. I also think there's a real need for kids that are gifted, that need some acceleration, and that I just think this is an important thing. And I don't believe that early childhood education is the only answer. I think it's kind of a way of kicking accountability down the road to say, what are you going to do? You're saying all these kids are 13 now. Oh, gee, it sucks to be you. Too bad you didn't go to Head Start, have a good early childhood education, and now you're 3 years behind, and I guess we're just going to write you off and go on to the next generation. You know, I work with those kids. I volunteer at a middle school, and I used to teach middle school. I feel very strongly you can make a difference in that age group.
Yeah, and in some ways, it's almost like when you talk about coding and you hear people say, well, there's no good programmers now, so now we have to start in, you know, from the day they come out of the womb or in kindergarten or what it is to build up those skills. And that idea that you're able to push accountability down and not look at what's really important today and how can we fix the problem right now. And the reality, too, is there's a lot of games out there already for preschool and kindergarten, and they're great, and I'm not bashing them. I use them for my kids. But what about, like I said, you know, like you talked about as well, you know, the market, what about kids that nobody's creating anything for? What about kids that aren't going to sit there and do them? How can you engage them in a way that brings them in and makes them actually want to do your games and gets better? Because we talk about, you know, there's this big drop-off, and it drops off from, you know, fourth grade to eighth grade to high school, and it doesn't get better. And so to sit there and say, well, it's just too late, we need to do something more, or, you know, it's just too late, I mean, we need to do something more right now. And so that's what I think we're doing. And that's what makes me feel good about what we're doing.
And I love teaching middle school kids. When I was teaching middle school full time, so many people say, oh my God, I could never deal with those kids. But so often you hear from parents or friends that say, oh, you know, Johnny was a really good kid, and then he fell in with the wrong crowd. It's easy to teach kindergarten, first grade. I mean, it's a lot of work. I mean, it's exhausting, but they're excited to be there and they love their teacher. It's sort of that old saying that kids need our love the most when they deserve it the least. You know, when you have kids that they don't want to be there and they're telling you that school sucks and you suck. So what do? We give up on them because they have a bad attitude when they're 11 or 12? No. And the thing that came back to me is I really, really believe in this. I really believe that we have a chance to change the trajectory that a lot of people, when they're in middle school, the reason they're so annoying is because they're trying to figure out who they are. They're questioning everything. And if we could give them some good answers, you know, this is why you need math. Yes, you can be good at it. You know, here's what crepuscular means if it comes up on your SAT scores.
Well, and I think what you're talking about is a good example of why, as a company, I mean, certainly you can listen to other people's input and, hey, I would think it'd be great if you took this direction or that. But you really also, at the end of the day, have to stick with what you really want to be doing.
And that was the epiphany I had as I saw that this incubator that said they were only funding pre-K kindergarten stuff is now closed, that they didn't make enough money and they're gone. And not that I have schadenfreude, whatever that word is that you like, that I like to, but it shows to me that so many people, for whatever reason, don't make it. That, you know, the statistic we're always hearing is that 90% of startups fail. So if the odds are you're not going to make it, you may as well do something that you really believe in and you really want to do, because then at least you devoted those years of your life to really doing good. And maybe you only helped, you know, 20,000 students, but you helped those students and you did something you really wanted to do. If you might fail either way, fail at something that matters to you.